Hello, everyone. This is Deborah Richardson, and today I am putting the AP in Happy, where accounts payable teams are empowered to protect the vendor master file from fraud. This podcast will give a voice to accounts payable team members by talking about the growing reality of cyber attacks in their world and which vendor setup and vendor management techniques they can apply to protect the vendor master file from fraud. Visit the Vendor Process Training Center to enroll in your choice of 55 plus training sessions that will help you and your team avoid fraud, compliance fines, and bad vendor data. Or just sign up to get access to vendor process FAQs and to attend weekly drop-in live Q&A sessions. Visit training.deborahrrichardson.com today. The link will be in the show notes. I love going to and speaking at accounts payable in-person conferences. I educate many, but I also learn a lot. And today, I have three tips I learned from practitioners to avoid making a fraudulent payment. Keep listening. Welcome to episode 239, three tips I learned from practitioners about avoiding fraudulent payments. Now, I went to this past week, which was the week of May 15th, and so it was that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And let me just tell you, I got so many steps. I was so tired, but it was an absolute great conference. It was through IOFM, which is actually, they're both an accounts payable and an accounts receivable organization. But every year they put on two conferences, one in the spring, and that's in Orlando, Florida. And then they also put on one in the fall. And this fall is going to be in Las Vegas. Well, in any event, I went to the spring conference, and again, very busy, very tiring. I had six different sessions, but within those sessions, I got some feedback. I asked for some, you know, some feedback on what they were currently doing, and I'm glad I did. I always do, but I'm glad that I do that because I learn some new things about what practitioners are doing in the field. And so let's talk about three that I learned. All right. So the first one really surprised me because I didn't even know this was possible. But this person was her organization was a government entity. And so she was able to integrate with SAM.gov and pull the vendor information from their SAM.gov profile. So if the vendor wanted a bank change and they contacted her or her team, the vendor would be told to go to SAM.gov and update their banking information. And that is possible because the registration or profile on SAM.gov does collect vendor banking as well as most other information required as part of vendor setup, including supplier diversity, address information, even contact information. And so this, I mean, is that a substitute for a vendor self-registration portal? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it sounds just like one and you didn't have to pay for it. Now, what I didn't ask was whether the information pulled included whether or not they were on the SAM.gov exclusion list and whether or not they performed a separate OFAC sanctions list check, because OFAC is absolutely required for U.S. organizations or entities and individuals. So you have to make sure the vendors are not on that list. And I am not sure if SAM.gov does that, although they could. So I would make sure that if you're going to look into that, you would ensure that any exclusion lists, sanctions lists, any other validations that you currently do for your vendors can be done within SAM.gov. And I'll give you a great example is that the validation for the IRS 10 match is performed as the registration is being completed. So that validation is done. It's also, or the registration also requires that they have a physical address. So you are protected against, you know, fraudsters hiding behind a P.O. box only address because that system will require a physical address. So check that out and see if it's something that can be useful or used by your company. Like I said, to me, it sounds like a free vendor self-registration portal if you can get connected or if you are eligible for it. All right, so let's move to the second one. So the second one is related to collecting vendor banking. And this practitioner collected banking by requiring their form to be mailed back. First off, they had their own form, so that was really good. But instead of having it come through email, it had to be mailed back. And so in my view, what this does is avoid the expectation to receive vendor banking via email. So if you or your team member received a request to change banking via email with that form, that is, right, the red flag that is fraudulent because it should come through mail. And maybe not fraudulent, but maybe let them know that they need to send that through regular U.S. mail. Now, sending through U.S. mail can be a deterrent, especially if it is a fraudulent request and the fraudsters are in a non-US country. That can be an obstacle. And I love it when we put obstacles in the way because those fraudsters were more likely than not abandon their request and just go on to the next potential victim that does not have these types of obstacles in place. Now, I will say that this does elongate the time it takes to set up a vendor or to change an existing vendor. You're probably thinking the same thing, but that mindset should already be changing. There are many third-party payment solution providers that will gladly take over your vendor onboarding, which, by the way, I completely agree with. So it removes the risk from the AP procurement or vendor team. But when you talk to those third-party payment solution providers about how long it takes to onboard vendors and process change requests for those vendors, it's about 10 to 15 days. So gone are the days where an internal sends you a vendor information packet or sends their W-9 and invoice or drops it off on your desk for immediate processing or even processing within 24 to 48 hours. Nowadays, because of all of the fraud, because of all the validations and the authentication and the checks that you should have in place, it should take longer to verify the request is not fraudulent and to process that vendor setup or vendor change. All right, so the last one I really liked, and I hadn't thought about it, but when they said it, it made so much sense. And it is, instead of asking for the last four digits of the tax ID or the bank account number to verify or authenticate the vendor, ask for the first two digits and the last two digits. This way, if they get a hold of a 1099 or any other document that truncates that number except for the last four digits, they can't successfully authenticate, right? So part of what I talk about with authenticating the vendor is to ask them 2 to 3 identifying questions to make sure they are who they say they are. Now, I usually say to ask for the last 4 or 5 digits. 5 digits would be best, but even better is the first 2 digits and the last 2 digits. Now, this one is really good. And I plan to update my information from using, again, the last 4 or 5 digits to using the first 2, and the last 2 digits. And if you think about it, right, the IRS allows us, and most of you probably already do this, to truncate the tax ID on the vendor's 1099. Well, you have that. And how many other documents are received where that information or that critical number, sensitive number, is truncated except for the last 4 digits? Now, I have seen masking or truncation within like accounting systems or ERPs, where it's the last 4 digits or the last 5 digits. But I've also seen it where they would mask using either the first 2 digits, maybe the middle digit or 2, and maybe the last 2 digits. So it's a combination of the beginning, the middle, and the end. So it really can be anything. And I think moving away from the last 4 or 5 digits is just where we are going now today. So if you have taken my authentication course, where I talk about using the last 4 digits of the bank account or the last 4 digits of the tax ID. And by that, I mean asking them to confirm, not giving it out. I'm going to change that, go forward to the first 2 digits and the last 2 digits. So that was really great. And again, I just love going to these in-person conferences because I learn so much. So that is all that I have for today. And hopefully you can learn from your peers with these tips. So thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the 239th episode of the Putting the AP in Happy podcast, where accounts payable teams are empowered to protect the vendor master file from fraud. Don't forget to check the show notes for the links mentioned in the podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing and writing a review of my podcast on the platform that you use to listen. Stay happy.